Hello, VeloNews listeners. This is Dan Cavallari, tech editor at VeloNews, coming at you with another VeloNews Tech podcast. And today we are going to be talking about something that is sort of confusing to a lot of people. Now, frame geometry can be tricky. A lot of changes in various angles of the frame tuning can have a pretty significant impact about how your bike handles. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about something that I cite pretty often in my reviews, which is a term called trail. And it occurred to me that maybe a lot of people don't know what trail is. So I wanted to get in touch with somebody who's sort of an expert in frame geometry and specifically talk about what trail is and how it affects the handling of your bicycle. So today we are calling all the way to Switzerland to speak with Stefan Christ, who is the head of R&D at BMC Switzerland. And Stefan is here today to talk a little bit about what affects the handling of your bicycle and specifically what trail is and how it affects the way you dive into corners or climb or steer through the peloton. Stefan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Hello.
So let's dive right in. Let's start with the easy basic question. What is trail?
Well, trail is a measurement that you can basically not measure on the bike, but I think we can all understand how it's measured. So it's basically the distance between where your front wheel contacts with the ground to the projection of the steering axle on the ground. So that's basically how you would measure it. So it's kind of a virtual measurement. Mm-hmm. So often it's measured on drawings or pictures.
So basically, if you had drawn a straight line through your head tube all the way to the ground and then measured the distance between where that line contacts the ground and where your tire contacts the ground, that measurement between those two spots, that's essentially your trail figure, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. How does trail affect a bicycle's handling? Why is this number even important?
The trail number is describing how nimble or how stable a bike rides. So the bigger the trail number, the more stable is the handling, and the smaller the trail number, the more nimble the bike is riding. That's in brief. There is other aspects that influence how a bike handles, but when you take big or small trail, this is what you will get. Mm-hmm.
So essentially, the bigger the number, that means that there's a longer distance between the angle of your head tube and where your tire is contacting the ground. And that will make for stable steering because it's a little bit longer. Whereas if those points are closer together, you get more reactive steering. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So other terms that we've heard in relation to handling, another term is fork rake. Why are bicycles' forks raked, and how does that affect the trail figure?
So the fork rake is basically the offset of the front axle to the steering axle of the fork. And basically, we use the offset or the fork rake to actually get to this trail number. So to get to the effect that the front wheel is trailing behind the steering axis. And it's the same here. Basically, you can achieve trail through different ways. But briefly, you can say if you increase basically the fork offset, you decrease your trail, and if you decrease the offset, you increase your trail.
Okay, so fork rake is essentially a way to control your trail so that you can customize how the steering works.
Yes, together with the head tube angle. Mm-hmm. So head tube angle plus fork rake is defining the trail.
Okay. And what other things can affect your trail? Like, for example, can your tire and wheel size, can that affect your trail? Can that increase or decrease trail?
Yes, Yes, the wheel diameter also has an influence, and I would say historically it was not considered as very important on road bikes because all the wheels had, I would say, fairly similar diameters. But today, with much bigger tires, even if you go further and look into gravel bikes, it's definitely a parameter that influenced the trail value much bigger than in the past.
So when you're designing a bike at BMC, you know, any bike, a mountain bike, a road bike, or a gravel bike, is there a sweet spot for trail, or does it vary pretty significantly based on what type of bike you're making?
It is varying, but for instance, for a road racing bicycle like our Team Machine, we choose 62 millimeter, which, if you look at racing bikes in general, it's a fairly big trail, but this is on purpose and it's the best balance we found for this kind of product. Overall, the range, I would say, on road bikes is somewhere between 54 and 63. So our bikes, they have rather long trail, but this is the kind of handling that we are looking for.
Uh-huh. And that's pretty interesting because, you know, the Team Machine, which I'm actually currently riding and just did a review on Velo News, and you can probably Google that right now, actually. It's a great bike, and I really enjoy it. But you're right, it's got a very long trail figure for an all-around bike. You know, for example, like a Specialized S-Works Tarmac, that's in the range of like 56 or maybe even shorter than that. It's a really short trail, and these two bikes ride very differently. You know, the S-Works is very reactive and quick in the front end, which is perfect for certain riders, but the BMC, the Team Machine, tends to be a little bit more stable, like you said, and that took some getting used to for me. I got on it and I sort of expected, okay, this is going to be an all-around bike. It's going to be, you know, really twitchy is the term we often use for bikes that are quick steering, which sounds pejorative, but really isn't. This bike's a lot more stable, which for somebody like me who spends a lot of time sprinting or putting in hard efforts, actually is quite nice. Now, why exactly did you guys choose that sort of handling over a more reactive feel? Was there rider feedback coming at you from the pros, or was it just something you guys decided was going to make a better race bike in general?
No, definitely the feedback from the team over the years influenced what the geometry of the Team Machine today is. And I think there's another factor, which is today on, I would say, high-end premium bikes, we often see deep section wheels, which influence the steering as well. And our testing just showed that we like the longer trail or the 62 millimeter trail more than the bikes which have a shorter trail. So it's kind of, I would say, team feedback, but also our own testing with the match to the latest developments on the wheel side.
And that's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about that. How could the deeper wheels affect the handling? What is it that you decided about deeper section wheels that made a longer trail more appropriate?
Overall, I think the bigger wheels, they are much more sensitive to changing winds. I mean, that's purely by the side surface. Even if the wheels get more predictable in this sense through those new rim profiles, but still you have to counter a much bigger steering force. And to actually not always have to do that when the wind is changing, a more stable race bike geometry, I think, helps to make you ride more relaxed.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I mean, we've all kind of had that moment where a good gust of wind hits us from the side, and all of a sudden you have to fight your front end. So this is essentially to counter that feeling. It's more of a planted feel, basically. Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. So that brings up, and you've already sort of answered this question to an extent, you know, based on technology, but How has bicycle design as it relates to trail changed over the last decade? You know, we see some companies are going with a smaller trail and some are going longer. Why are those changes happening? Is it simply because of new technology that's available, or was there some sort of aha moment where people, you know, designers said, oh, we're doing this wrong and we need to figure out a better way to do it?
If you look in the big picture, actually the trail values didn't change much over the time. So I still think we are at the beginning of exploring maybe new grounds, also with going in new kind of road bikes like gravel bikes and things like that. So I think what we see today is still based on, I would say, you can call it history or experience. I think it's was always in those ranges. Of course, there has been on prototype level different approaches, but when we look at the commercial range of road bikes, I think we are still within a tight range that is the same for the last 20 years. But it's clear that the equipment, I mean, inertia of wheels, but also, as I said, the side surface of the wheels is changing. And we also have to admit that there is other components, like whatever you bolt on the handlebar, that could be hydraulic shift levers, all those things that basically rotate around the steering axle, they have an influence on how a bike is steering. And I think we are always trying to optimize the whole system. And I think that's part of it. And in the end, it's also, we have to say a little bit what the rider likes. I mean, there is riders who like something very nimble, twitchy, other like it stable. On our side, we think no matter which bike we do, we prefer to give a feeling of safety to the rider, that he can ride comfortably and also with confidence. That's why we go overall, I think, on all our bikes for rather stable geometry.
Sure. I want to take a quick step back. You mentioned inertia. And another pretty commonly misunderstood term that we at VeloNews have actually used in some of our reviews is the moment of inertia. Can you explain just briefly what that means?
Basically, the further out you have a mass when something is rotating, that could be a wheel that is constantly rotating, or that could also be everything that is hanging somewhere around the steering axle. The further out the mass is, and the bigger this mass, the higher the inertia is. And what it means basically, technically, that in the end, in order to turn, whether it's a wheel or whether it's the steering axle, the higher the inertia, the more force you need to turn whatever is rotating.
Right. Okay. So basically, when you hear for our listeners here, when you hear the term moment of inertia, what that means is that's the force essentially that you need to overcome to get your wheels or whatever else is rotating. That's the force you need to get your wheels going. So when, for example, when 29er bikes hit the scene, there were a lot of complaints that they were very slow to accelerate. And that's because 29ers had a bigger moment of inertia than a 26-inch wheel because there was more weight on the outside of the wheels. So all that mass on the outside of your rims, you needed to put in more force to get them to rotate. And that means that they had a higher moment of inertia. So that's another factor when you're considering things like handling and reactivity of a bike, which brings me to my next question, Stefan. You know, with trail, we started this conversation about what is trail and how that affects a bike's handling, but it sounds like there's actually a lot of things that go into determining how a bike handles, not just the trail. What are some of the other factors besides, now we've talked about moment of inertia, we've talked about trail, what other geometry decisions do you make in a bicycle that can affect how it handles?
If we look at geometry, I think it's mainly the wheelbase that has an effect, and within that also the split between rear center or chainstay length and front center, so where your bottom bracket sits within between the two wheels. This has definitely an influence from a geometry point of view. And then on the frame, I think one of the key values that is responsible for how a bike handles is the torsional stiffness of the front triangle. So the less basically the front triangle deforms under a steering action, the more precise is the handling, the more direct. That's also something that is influencing the feeling a lot.
That's interesting, because we often talk about stiffness in frames as an influence on pedaling responsiveness, not so much handling. That's interesting to think that the way a frame deforms when you steer, like for example, if you lean into a corner and that frame flexes more than another, that could mean that your handling feels more languid or slow, whereas a stiffer frame might feel like it's got tighter steering, even if it has a slightly longer trail. Does that sound right?
That's correct. I think you can have a bike with a long trail and a soft frame, and basically a bike which has a short trail and a very stiff frame, and they would definitely feel completely different, and it's overlapping effects. Mm-hmm. So
then that brings up another question. One of the common things that we talk about with frame geometry when we talk about how a bike handles is not only wheelbase, but also chainstay length. And I feel like a lot's been made about chainstay length. You know, we want shorter chainstays, and that helps with reactivity. Why would a shorter chainstay help a bike handle any better?
The main reason, I think, is the weight distribution that you have. I mean, first of all, whatever you cut on the rear end is influencing the wheelbase. So I think it's pretty obvious that the shorter wheelbase makes your bike twisting faster. But also the distribution, how much weight you have on the front and on the rear wheel is heavily influenced where your bottom bracket sits between the axle. So typically, when you have shorter chainstays, you have more weight on the rear wheel, which makes, I would say, the front wheel less heavy on the ground. So you can twist and turn it faster.
I want to take another step back to something we talked about a little bit earlier. You mentioned that your tire size and your wheel size can change your trail. I want to talk about an example of that. So we know that tires now on the roadside are getting much wider. How does that, so if I get a bike that comes stock with 700x25C tires and I bump up to a 700x28C tire, what does that do to my trail?
The bigger the wheel diameter is, the more you will increase the trail. So you will already, by the increasing trail number, you will make the bike more stable. But I think another effect that is even increasing the stability is that typically a bigger tire is heavier. So it goes back to the inertia. So definitely bigger tires, I think not only they feel more comfortable, but they also make the bikes typically more stable. But this can be very minimal, but I think we can all feel it.
Mm-hmm. And that's important to bring up, because you know, when we talk about wider tires, and again at VeloNews we've made a point of this, is, you know, the wider tire makes a different shape of contact patch on the ground. And that is actually better for rolling resistance. But when you increase your tire width, you're actually also increasing the diameter of your tire, or excuse me, of your wheel. So it becomes essentially taller, and that will affect your trail. And not only that, you're increasing the weight, like Stefan said, and that increases the moment of inertia, and that's the force you need to overcome to get your bike rolling. So there's sort of a trade-off there. So there's lots of different things you can do to affect not only your trail, but the overall handling feel of your bike. Now, Stefan, we talked, for those of you listening, this is actually the second time Stefan and I have talked because I goofed up and failed to hit record last time we spoke. So we've sort of been through this conversation once. And the last time we spoke, Stefan, we talked a little bit about somebody who perhaps has a bike that's a couple of years old, and they're sitting there going, boy, I wish my handling was a little bit more stable. Is there anything they can do to increase the stability of their front end without having to go and get a new bike with a longer trail?
Yeah, without touching the frame and the fork, I think there's two things. So one, what you already discussed just before, is working with bigger tires, maybe a little bit more rotational mass. Then you can also work with whatever else is hanging on this steering axis. So for instance, stiffness of the stem has an impact on the handling. But also, let's say, the shifters that you run, typically they are pretty far from the steering axle. And I mean, it's not something that you choose as a tuning parameter, but the weight of your shift brake levers has an influence. So I would say if I would have to address or want to do a change on my existing bike, I think I would try with the wheels and tires. And if I have a stem that is, let's say, particularly soft or particularly stiff, I think there is also definitely differences that influence the steering behavior in one or the other direction. So if you want a steering that is more precise, then I think it's a good choice to go for a heavier stem that is really stiff. If you are looking for a bike handling that's a little bit more stable or forgiving, then a super light, softer stem can actually already bring what you're looking for.
Interesting. So you would start obviously with tires and wheels, and then from there, the stem. That's interesting. I had actually would have thought that the handlebar would have been a more important upgrade to make in that case. But you're saying the stem's stiffness actually has a pretty significant effect.
Yes. That's at least what we find on our bikes. Maybe it's also because it's easier to change than the handlebar.
Right.
Purely from a handling perspective, it's easier to explore different things. And that's maybe why I did not mention handlebar. But overall, stiffnesses and weight distribution around the steering axle is influencing it or can be used for fine-tuning, I would say, like that.
Yeah, and a stem seems like a pretty low-risk change to make. I mean, you're not going to... Stems don't really have a different feel, per se. They just have a different effect on the bike. So it's sort of a low-risk upgrade to make, whereas handlebars, not only are they expensive, but they all feel different. There's, you know, different drops, different angles. So it's definitely, and plus you have to remove your bar tape, remove your levers. It's sort of a production. So, you know, changing out your stem is kind of a quick and easy way to figure out if that affects your trail. Probably even easier than that is changing out your tires. But then you get into things like, as Stefan said, you know, your shifters, all that weight that's on the outside of your bars. Again, that increases your moment of inertia. Which has a bigger effect on handling than perhaps we thought before. I mean, it's easy to think about trail as this one number that dictates what your bike is going to do when you turn those bars, but that certainly isn't the case. There's so many other things. Now, that brings up another point. A lot of us out here listening, and this is me included, we ride road bikes, we ride gravel bikes, we ride mountain bikes, we even ride commuter bikes. Do different styles of bicycles benefit from longer or shorter trail figures? And I think, you know, the answer to that is pretty obvious. I mean, clearly what's good for one bike isn't going to be good for another. But is there sort of a rule of thumb? Like, do mountain bikes always have longer trail figures? do gravel bikes always have, you know, shorter trail figures? What are sort of the rules of thumb there?
Yeah, I think you named one of the extremes. I think we can always say mountain bikes have significant longer trail figures than road bikes. And maybe on the other side of the spectrum, the bikes with the shortest trail figures are probably the bikes that are ridden on the track or criterium racing bikes. Mm-hmm. I think this is kind of the spectrum. I think with gravel, we will still see how they will position themselves. I think the designs that we see out there, they are actually very close to the road bikes, but who knows whether in 1 or 2 years this is developing more in the direction of where we are with, let's call it, mountain bike hardtails. So I think that's going to be very, very interesting. Where is the gravel bikes going with the trail? Like always, there is pros and cons for longer, shorter trail. In the end, we are exploring a lot in this direction, also because we definitely see that what we know, for instance, as a Belgium cyclocross bike is basically a road bike from a trail perspective, and it's definitely not the most confident inspiring ride that you can get off-road. So I think there's a lot to explore, and it's really going to be interesting with the gravel bikes.
As an engineer who's currently, you know, in the throes of developing new products, is that a pretty exciting thing to be a part of a new category of bicycles as they're evolving?
I think that's what is driving us in general. And some of those categories, like gravel, they are very obvious. And I think since it's rather new and recent, I think everyone is curious to see where it's going, and it's developing a lot. And I think it's pretty predictable to say that what we have today, maybe in 2-3 years, will be slightly different. But I mentioned before on the road bikes, the arrival of deep section wheels, I think did not change the bike geometry as much as it could have been. So it's also exciting in an area where we consider as developed to still look into those things and try maybe what has not yet been tried, just by either not having time or not thinking about it. So I think that's our current challenge, and it's more easy to work on the things that are trendy and very obvious than improving what we all consider as well developed and established. But things are changing, so we should from time to time also question again what was established a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, and this is sort of a 30,000 foot question. You mentioned earlier that the trail figures on the roadside haven't really changed all that much over the last 10 to 15 years. They haven't drastically changed anyway. But the way bicycles look have certainly changed. And, you know, we've talked about trail. We've talked about deep section wheels. One of the more obvious signs of change in bicycle design is the dropped seat stays. They don't meet at the junction with the top tube anymore. Well, some do, of course, but you know, the Team Machine from BMC is actually a great example of this. The seat stays do not meet the seat tube at the junction with the top tube. It's lower than that. Is that a function of is that a handling decision? Is it an aero decision? Is it a comfort decision? Why are we seeing that now?
I can only speak for BMC, and it was clearly coming out of a need for more comfort or vertical compliance. So I think we introduced this almost 10 years ago with Team Machine back in the days. what we called tuned compliance concept, so TCC. That was big part of it. So by lowering the seat stay attachment point on the C-tube, basically you have a longer free bending length for the seat post, which makes your ride much more compliant. Mm-hmm. And also the frame gets much more compliant in the vertical direction. And I think we kind of started this trend, and just recently we have seen that there is more and more brands adopting this way. And I think it's an obvious performance benefit to have road bikes that provide more comfort, yet still being stiff in the areas where you need either power transfer or what we named earlier, the steering.
So that those drop seat stays are actually, there's not really, it's not done for aerodynamic benefit, which is something we often see kicked around on the internet.
Theoretically, I think we could say yes, the seat stays, they get shorter if they are lower, so they have less exposed area to the wind, so it should be more aerodynamic as well. But in a big picture, we can say on a bicycle, whatever happens behind the rotating legs has a minor aerodynamic effect.
Right. So one of the things that strikes me about the conversation we've just had, which started off as a conversation about trail, which is a specific geometry decision, but then our conversation branched off into so many other regions of geometry and bike design. So for me, the ultimate takeaway here is that trail is one thing that affects handling, but it is not the thing that affects handling. There are so many other decisions bike designers are making to affect both handling, responsiveness, comfort, and it's all in a way tied together. You can increase your trail figure, but maybe you need to decrease your chain stay length, or you know, if you increase that trail figure, you need to increase the lateral stiffness of the main triangle. So I think when we're looking at bicycles, we tend to think of them as consumers in very simplistic terms. Oh, a longer trail figure, that's going to be a slow steering bike, or a shorter trail figure, that's going to be a really whippy, fun bike. But there's so many other factors that can contribute to how a bike handles and responds to your pedaling forces, your steering forces. And I think what Stefan brought up today are all great tools for us to sort of think about how a bike handles, particularly in things like movement of inertia, which is probably not something we all wake up thinking about in the morning. But when you go into that bike shop, it's interesting to think about how those forces are affecting your ride. So Stefan, first of all, thank you for clarifying a lot of these terms for us and giving us a more holistic view of geometry as it relates to bicycle design. Is there anything we missed that we didn't talk about specifically about trail and bike handling?
No, I think maybe I can just add the comment that a lot of this is also personal preference. And as human being, we are maybe the most adaptive machine. So I think we all get used to whatever we ride. And whatever you change, I think the change is going to be the most obvious in the moment you did the change. And after that, you get used to. I think that's overarching in the big picture, something that we should not forget.
That's a good takeaway for the end of our podcast. Probably the biggest effect on your bike's handling is you. So that makes things a little easier, right? Stefan, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And for all you VeloNews listeners, if you've got any questions or comments about this particular podcast today, or if you've got suggestions for topics you would like me to cover in the future on this podcast, please do comment on Facebook or tweet at me at Brown Tie Dan. And of course, you can tweet at VeloNews as well. And thank you for listening today. It's been a pleasure.